episode of the DFA Podcast, we preview the American League while also recapping our favorite and least favorite offseason moves. It's the DFA Podcast, and yes, we still exist.
Episode 56 of the DFA Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grossnick, and joining me, as always, my co-host, RJ Anderson. RJ, we're getting down to it. Only a few days until opening day. Are you pumped?
Absolutely, Brian. I'm more pumped to be back, though.
Yeah. It's been a long time since we've had a chance to chat and do that for the podcast listening audience, but we have not been DFA'd. We are set to go for opening day, and today's going to be the first of two episodes, hopefully, where we go over kind of a postseason review, team by team. We'll start today with the American League, and we'll go over some of the major moves, some of the moves that we haven't yet covered as part of our weekly episodes, talk a little bit about what we can expect from what happened this offseason for each team. So, I don't know, I think that could be kind of a fun exercise, and there's a lot of stuff we haven't quite gotten to cover in the last 2 weeks, so I think that'll be fun to do.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, with that, we'll just dive right in, I guess. And since we will start with the American League, we'll actually start with the American League West, which means we'll start with the defending, reigning, and undisputed American League. They won the American League pennant. They won the World Series. They're the Houston Astros. So the Astros are kind of an easy team to talk about because they didn't really do that much this offseason, right?
Yeah, I mean, their moves were pretty much limited to trading for Gerrit Cole, signing Joe Smith, signing Hector Rondon, and I believe that's about it. They might have signed some minor league free agents, but none of them are going to make this team because this team is loaded.
Yeah, so, why talk about Tim Federowitz when we got Gerrit Cole to talk about and we got these other guys who are incumbent? There's a couple of injuries that are going to affect their opening day roster. Yuli Gurriel is still recovering from his Hamate surgery, but that doesn't really affect the composition of the 25-man roster very much, does it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, they had the option of playing Marwin Gonzalez at first base to begin with, and that might be the smart play anyway, because I think you could potentially argue that Derek Fisher makes that lineup better than Gurriel does, depending on your thoughts on Gurriel. But beyond that, I think the most interesting development for this team is that J.D. Davis made the bench, because I have a front office friend who wants to see J.D. Davis be a two-way player because of, you know, his ability to pitch a little bit and also play third base and be a right-handed bat off the bench. So I think that's the most interesting development for their opening day roster. They're another team that's going to a three-man bench seemingly to open the season, which is not really my favorite thing. However, at least they have a somewhat valid excuse in that they have Colin McHugh, they have Brad Peacock, and, you know, they have some other relievers who they obviously want to carry into the season. So, you know, at least here it's not, oh, they're carrying like a replacement level reliever instead of a fourth bench bat. It's they're carrying, you know, whatever good arm instead of sending them to the minors. In McHugh's case, he does have an option remaining, I believe. So they could, in theory, do that, but I get why they wouldn't. So, I mean, it's a good team. We've talked about the Cole trade at length. It seemed like a very good deal for Houston. There's still some chicken on the bone there. I don't think it would surprise either of us if Cole performs better in Houston than he did in Pittsburgh, just because, you know, that's the way things are breaking for the Astros. And I don't really know what their weakness is at this point.
Yeah, it's tough to peg one. I love J.D. Davis. I too, much like your front office friend, you have a podcast friend who is also excited about the possibility of J.D. Davis as a two-way player. I did the comments for the Astros in the BP annual, and that was basically the only thing I talked about when I talked about Davis is how much I want to see him pitch instead. He's both strikeout prone as a hitter, and he is strikeout prone as a pitcher. So I think that's I made the comment that I thought it was kind of funny that strikeouts may tank his hitting career but save his pitching career, which is a very ironic turn. I do like the fact that it looks like he may be starting as a platoon option against lefties, which is kind of cool. But if I had to pick a weakness for this team, this 25-man roster, and really in the minor leagues too, the Astros only have two left-handed pitchers. They've got Dallas Keuchel in the rotation, and they've got Tony Sipp in the bullpen. Sipp isn't exactly a shutdown lefty. He's a loogie, and he's probably the worst relief pitcher in the bullpen. I would have liked to have seen them go out and pick up a left-handed reliever of some note, but I would have to imagine, like, when they're in contention around the deadline, they'll go ahead and do that.
Yeah, and they have a pair of lefties on their 40-man roster who aren't going to break camp with the big league club in Buddy Boshers and Raymond Gudon. But I don't think most of our listeners have heard of either of those guys until just now, and that kind of does speak to the quality of them at this point. So you're right. At some point, they're probably going to go out and get a lefty. Maybe they go and sign Dan Jennings, who was just released, and maybe they get him on a minor league deal or something. But yeah, I think that's. I feel like if we're talking about, oh, they don't have a left-hand reliever or, more than two left-handed pitchers, I think they're perfectly fine. And if that's the one nit you can pick with them, then they're in very good position, right?
Right, absolutely. And Joe Smith has that delivery that lets him almost operate as if he were a left-handed relief pitcher because he's kind of death to righties even though he's a righty. Or excuse me, he's kind of death to lefties even though he's a righty. So they've got him that kind of mitigates that anyway. But yeah, I would give the offseason a high mark because of the Cole acquisition, because it feels like they acquired Cole for what you might consider spare parts.
Yeah.
And it's a team that's got a good future, so good for them.
Yep. Moving on. Do you
Moving
want to go in alphabetical order or do you want to go in
Yes,
just whatever order we
let's
want?
go alphabetical.
All right. So I guess we would move on to the Oakland Athletics, who are near and dear to my heart and not so near and dear to Brian's heart. They're off
RJ, RJ
season.
man. The Angels are next alphabetically.
Oh, I thought we were going by team name.
Oh, I see. You were thinking the Wait a second.
Yes.
Am I just losing my mind here?
Well, Angels would come before Astros.
Yes. So
So I
yes, I am
okay, you know
losing my
what?
mind. It's
I got you. Let's go. Okay.
thanks, buddy.
Yes, that was a mistake on my part. I was thinking next. Okay. So next up would be the Angels, who had, a notable offseason, I suppose. They signed that guy, what is his name? Shohei Ohtani. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. They also
Nope.
signed Zach Cozart to play third base. They traded for Ian Kinsler to play second base. They signed Rene Rivera to back up catcher. They signed Chris B. Young to back up in the outfield. Oh boy, and they're not done yet. They also traded for Jim Johnson and they took Luke Bard in the Rule 5 draft. And if you haven't heard his name yet, if he makes the club, you're going to hear his name a fair amount because of his crazy spin rate. Other than that, the Angels were pretty quiet this winter. So, has this team done enough to put itself into realistic, excuse me, realistic competitiveness for the second wild card spot, or even the first wild card spot?
Yeah, I think they're the favorite for the second wild card spot. And I think that if everything breaks right for this team, they have a very high ceiling. If everything doesn't break right for this team and they have kind of a median projection, I think they are definitely an above 500 team, and I definitely think they're the front runner for that second wild card spot. But given the superstar talent on the team, I think that they have a higher ceiling than your average, than perhaps like the Twins or some of the other teams that might be contending for that second wild card spot. I really loved the Cozart acquisition at the time. I still like it. But it's really interesting to me how different that deal looks in hindsight after Todd Frazier and Mike Moustakas got these sweetheart deals from the Mets and the Royals respectively, where they didn't pay very much to acquire this talent. Whereas now Cozart, he doesn't really look like an overpay, but it looks like the Angels could have saved some money or reallocated some resources to address their pitching, which seems to be the weakest part of the team, while picking up a different third baseman. But I really like Cozart and I think he's a good fit for this team, so I'm not mad. But I do think they were aggressive during an offseason when a lot of teams weren't aggressive, and I think it worked out really well for them.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And I guess if we want to play conspiracy theory, maybe they designed Shift Kozar at the second base and chase Manny Machado this winter. Although I know Machado would like to remain at shortstop, and the Angels probably should spend some money on pitching if they decide to make a big splash this winter. But pitching is what's going to determine how far this team goes because they have a lot of injury risk in the rotation. Basically, everyone in the rotation is an injury risk, or is Shohei Ohtani, who frankly is an injury risk in his own right because he is a pitcher and because he's trying to make a transition to a shorter schedule, a different ball, a different competition level, blah, 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 blah. Because this is the Angels, I feel that we have to mention their bullpen. You know, Billy Epler has been pretty good at finding cheap parts. Right now, Roster Resource projects Cam Bedrosian to enter the season as their closer, with Blake Parker and Jim Johnson setting him up. Then you have Keenan Middleton, who I like quite a bit. You have Jose Alvarez, Noah Ramirez, Blake Wood, and the aforementioned Bard. And on paper, that is not an impressive group, name-wise.
No.
However, in reality, I fully expect them to somehow end up being a top-half bullpen just because that seems to be one of Epler's real strengths as a general manager.
Yeah, I agree with you a lot. I really like the back end of it. I like Bedrosian a lot. Blake Parker was really good last year, and Jim Johnson's pretty reliable, so I think that's good. I think as kind of a whole, the team is not as deep as I would like, both in the bullpen and on the bench. I do like René Rivera. I thought that was a really savvy backup catcher add for this team, but it's not like they've got a lot of AAA help nearby. And with the bench being guys like Chris Young and Jeffrey Marte, that's not bad. But I definitely think that in some additional depth, which may be coming at the deadline again, you can talk about that for a lot of these teams that'll be in contention, would help round out this team, because I expect there's going to be some injuries in the starting lineup at some point with the age of guys like, Kinsler and Pujols who are going to fit in.
Yeah, and I would note though, they do have a few arms who, in theory, come up from AAA. You have Nick Trapiano, whose changeup earned him some play a few years back. Parker Bridwell kind of looked like a Jared Weaver knockoff last year. They have Troy Scribner, and then they also have Jamie Barilla, who I believe made Keith Law's top 100 prospect rankings. And even though he doesn't really look like he should be, a top 100 prospect because he's kind of on the smaller side, he has that pitchability flair to him that, really catches my eye and really gets me having gaga eyes. So we're gonna keep an eye on him. And to their credit, they do have a few, I guess, decent, not decent spare parts, because I can't call Nolan Fontana a decent spare part anymore. But Caleb Cowart is in the minors. If you believe what he did at all last year, then he's an okay bench piece. They have Chris Carter, who is basically CJ Krohn's replacement on this roster. And that was a masterstroke, I think. Trading Krohn for anything and then just signing basically his little bit, I think a little bit older, maybe a little bit worse replacement, who's basically not really going to factor into their opening day roster, I don't believe. But still, I appreciated that very much. And yeah, this looks like a fine team. There's a lot of variability here because of rotation and because of the health of some of their players, as you mentioned. But I could see it being competitive, and I could also see it disappointing. I don't know if I see it necessarily overachieving unless they really get lucky with the health and Ohtani is basically a star or superstar level performer from day one, which is probably an unrealistic expectation because, he's a kid, a lot of adjustments, a lot of expectation is on his shoulder. If he struggles out of the gate, that is perfectly okay.
The best case scenario is obviously that Richards, Shoemaker, Skaggs, and Ohtani all stay healthy for a full season. I would say the odds of that are like less than 10%. They're not good. But I would think if those top four starters stay healthy for a full season, you're looking at a 90-win team. I just don't see that being very likely at all.
I agree with that.
So good on the Angels. Great job being aggressive in a year where few teams were. Let's move on to Oakland. So the Athletics, they've made some moves recently that we haven't had a chance to talk about, namely the acquisition of Jonathan Lucroy, signing him to a contract. I believe it was a 2-year deal. In addition to that, they've got a good young core. They've got some interesting pitchers. I know that this is one of the areas on which we kind of have divergent opinions, because I still see the Athletics as a lower tier team, especially in this division, and you're a little bit higher on them. So let's, I'd really like to hear more about, you know, what you like about the Athletics and what they're doing.
Well, I think their lineup is going to slug.
Yeah.
They had a pretty good offense last season, especially in the second half. I think Matt Olson, even if he's not what he was last season, can be a fine above-average contributor for them. I think Matt Chapman is the new face of the franchise. He's a Gold Glove caliber third baseman who should be at least a league average hitter. That's a pretty good player to build around. I look at their lineup, and I really don't see a weak spot anymore. You know, before they signed Luke Roy, I thought there was an obvious weak spot behind the plate. And you can make the case that maybe center field is one, depending on what happens with Dustin Fowler.
I'll jump in real quickly there because I really did see center field as a weak spot when Boog Powell was going to be starting there. I like Dustin Fowler a lot. I think that he makes this team a lot better if he's able to stay healthy.
That makes sense to me. And they also have some interesting, Chad Pender, I don't know what to make of him, but he's kind of interesting. Last season, he's coming off the bench for them, which is a plus. Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll be there in a platoon role or something, but that's still interesting. The bullpen, they did a lot of work there. They went out and acquired Ryan Buchter, Yasmary Petit, Emilio Pagan. I believe they might have also signed a non-roster guy, but even last year they had made some additions to the bullpen at the deadline right after when they got Chris Hatcher and Blake Trinan. And so the question mark for this team is really the starting rotation. You know, it's never necessarily a good sign when your opening day rotation, your opening day starter, excuse me, is Kendall Graven, because he's more of a mid-rotation guy, and you know he's always hurt. And there's plenty of reasons to be skeptical about this rotation. I guess I'm just expecting that one of these young guys is going to work out. Sean Manea, he's already basically a mid-rotation starter. Mm-hmm. Maybe he takes a step forward. I don't know. Daniel Gossett, Daniel Mingden, and Andrew Triggs, if they can just perform like number four starters, I think this team is in a much better position to compete than they're giving credit for. That said, I don't know how likely that is. And, you know, with A.J. Puck suffering an injury, and you know, maybe you're not as high on Grant Holmes, and you know, they just signed Trevor Cahill and Brett Anderson, which may suggest that they aren't necessarily going to push guys like Puck and Logan Shore and so on and so forth through the minors as quickly as we would like them to. It's certainly a situation that begs for some trepidation, and I get that completely. I just think that there's a chance this team is competitive for the second wild card, and I think I picked them to finish third in the division just because, I don't know, I have a feeling that maybe this team can outperform its expectations.
Yeah, I think that they could, for sure. And, you know, Puck had an injury issue in the spring, but before that, he was pitching like he belonged to be, you know, in the middle, if not at the front of this rotation. That, like, he came up pretty quickly, I feel like. I was more expecting him to be part of the 2019 team, and he still might be. But I definitely feel like if they decide to make the move to put him in the rotation and they feel like he's healthy enough to stay there for a little while, that kind of changes the complexion of this team a bit. And I really do like the signing of Trevor Cahill. I think that was really savvy. I don't actually believe that he's going to make more than like 15 starts for this team, because he tends not to ever do that. But when he does start, and when he does pitch in these short bursts, like 4 or 5 innings, he's pretty good. He had a nice little season last year before moving to the Royals and suffering more injuries. So that, to me, like the combination of Puck and Cahill may shore up a rotation that I you know, obviously I think the rotation's the weakest point of this team. And I like the additions they made to the bullpen. Buchter and Yusmeiro Petit are really kind of underrated, understated acquisitions. Two guys that I really like. So these later moves with Luke Roy and Cahill and, you know, Brett Anderson, you can take or leave. But I saw him pitch one good game last year, so I have that in my head. I think this team is now, I'm starting to buy into what you've been selling.
Dun, dun, dun. And I would also note, they have some death on the way. Franklin Barreto will be at AAA. Jorge Mateo is presumably going to be at AAA as well. Mm-hmm. Those are two of their top three prospects, according to BP, as well as BA. And if you want to extend a little bit, they also have a catching prospect on the way who not going to really move the chains. But, you know, Sean Murphy is a guy who, when I wrote my article on Jeff Mathis, was raised as the potential next Mathis by Christopher Crawford because of his game calling and defensive abilities behind the plate. And it's kind of funny because the A's also had Jason Goldstein, who Crawford also mentioned. So he mentioned two catchers who could become the next Jeff Mathis, and they're both in the Oakland A's system. That certainly raised my eyebrows. I don't know if that's intentional. I don't know if that's a stroke of luck, but it's interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, it certainly is. So, you know, the A's are going to be an interesting team. We're not quite sure if they're going to be good, but they're certainly going to be interesting. I think you can sort of say the same thing about the Seattle Mariners, the next team we're going to talk about. They had an active offseason because Jerry DePoto's their general manager. They're going to have an active offseason. They didn't sign much in the way of free agents, but they did bring back Ichiro to, I guess, be a starting outfielder for this team, which is kind of weird to think about. They brought in Juan Nicasio to shore up the bullpen. They made a couple of trades. They brought in Ryan Healy from the A's. They brought in Dee Gordon from Miami to play center field, which was kind of unexpected. They brought in Andrew Romine for no good reason. And they've added Boyd LeBlanc to the bullpen, which is good because they need more guys who could possibly start because they just don't have a lot of starting pitchers. I usually tend to run optimistic on the Mariners. How do you feel about this Mariners team?
I used to. Now I am in the other camp. I've heard a lot of disturbing things behind the scenes about this team. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of expecting this to end with Jerry DePoto crew getting fired before the season's out at this point. I like the Dee Gordon trade. The Ryan Healy trade was whatever. Ichiro, I really don't think I understand that. And I don't think that deal was made for us. I think it's made for, you know, a few weeks of a nostalgia act before Ben Gamble returns and they bid Ichiro adieu. Beyond that, they really needed to go out and get pitching help. They really needed to take advantage of Cobb, Arrieta, and Lynn being available so late. And yet, you never saw their name mentioned with any of them. It's like they didn't have any money to spend or something. And that's not a good thing because this team's pitching depth is not that great. You know, Felix Hernandez is not what he used to be. James Paxton is unreliable so far as, you know, staying on the mound goes. Mike Leake was brilliant for the Mariners, but history suggests Mike Leake is not brilliant. He is, right, you know, an average to slightly above average, depending on the year, starter, which is perfectly fine. But, you know, let's keep that in mind. You know, Marco Gonzalez is a guy I like. He's very athletic, has a good changeup. Again, that's the way into my heart, but he's really not shown that he can be a big league starter at this point. And, you know, maybe this is the year. He's out of options, so it's going to have to be the start of something for him. And then beyond that, the fifth starter is, what, Erasmo Ramirez when he's healthy, perhaps Casey Lawrence, Ariel Miranda, Rob Whalen, Andrew Moore, Chase DeJong. None of those names are inspiring optimism in me. I guess you can throw out Max Pobsey, but yeah, there's not a lot there. I know Hisashi Iwakuma was in camp as a non-roster invitee. Not really sure I want to see more of him at this point, even though he's had a, you know, very good career. But this is a team that's not impressing me on paper, and I can see it cratering very quickly, especially if they have something unforeseen happen, like, say, 37-year-old Nelson Cruz no longer being able to hit as a well above average player or performer, whatever you want to say there. You know, if Cano gets injured, if Dee Gordon doesn't take the center field quite as well as expected, or, you know, basically if anything happens to their best players, this team is completely and utterly screwed. They don't have a depth and they don't have the means to recover from that. And this looks like a top heavy lineup again. And it looks like a paper thin rotation and maybe even a paper thin bullpen. I know they have some interesting arms on the way, but, you know, look at this bullpen. It's, you know, Edwin Diaz, Juan Nicasio, Nick Vincent, James Pazos, Dan Altavilla, Scrabble, and then Wade LeBlanc and Casey Lawrence. That's, I don't know, maybe I'm being too harsh here, but to me, this is a team that's going to finish fourth place, probably, maybe fifth. And I think that might be the end of Jerry DePoto in Seattle when it happens.
I mean, it could very well be. I tend to run a little more optimistic about the lineup, I think, than you do. I do think you're right. If one of the big guys like Cano or Cruz falls apart or gets injured, then you're right. The lineup doesn't look nearly as good. But the good thing for the Mariners is that while they have these veteran guys, they do have a history of not only staying upright and healthy, but staying productive. Yeah, this could be the year that they fall apart, but looking at Gordon, Segura, Cano, Cruz, Seager as the top five in that lineup, that's about as reliable as I think you can hope for. And
You just curse them.
yeah, of course, yeah, knock on wood. So that doesn't concern me too much. I like Mitch Haniger, I like Mike Zunino. I think that their starting nine are fine. They don't have depth, just like you said. Dan Vogelbach's going to be the first bat off the bench, which could go great and more than likely will not. But both the rotation and the bullpen are bad. They're very bad. And like you said, paper thin and unreliable. Mike Leake is the only reliable starter in this rotation. James Paxton is fabulous but could get injured. Felix Hernandez, we're always unsure about his performance and his health now. And like you said before, there's nobody else. You have a bunch of, AAA number seven starters that you talked about before. It's not a good scene there. They really had to make a move this offseason and didn't, which was very surprising. I agree with you. I think that's going to be their weakness, and I think we're going to see another year like last year where they ran through more pitchers on their 25-man roster than any other team. So neither of us are super thrilled with what's going on in Seattle. I still think they might be better than the Athletics, though. But that remains to be seen.
Let's move on to the Texas Rangers. I don't want to dignify that with a real
response.
I'm The Rangers, they were surprisingly busy this winter. They basically installed a new rotation.
sure.
They signed Doug Fister. They signed Mike Minor. They traded for Matt Moore. You could throw Bartolo Colon in there as someone they signed as well, because he should be in the rotation at least the first time through. In the bullpen, they added Chris Martin from overseas, Jesse Chavez, and Kevin Jepsen, assuming he does make the bullpen. And they basically did nothing to the lineup, which, depending on your perspective, makes sense. But
Don't forget about Tim
10 months
Lincecum
ago,
for that bullpen.
yeah, he just came into my mind. Yes, they also had Tim Lincecum, who you would figure will work his way into the bullpen as soon as he's up to par. And I guess the most notable thing they did to the lineup was demote Willie Calhoun, who I think a lot of us had in their opening day lineup, perhaps as their left fielder. Nope, won't be the case. So I guess my issue with this team is very simple. I don't trust the rotation. Because of that, it's hard for me to buy into this team at all. Cole Hamels took a step backward last season. Not sure what he's going to do. Fister, look, he's just not my cup of coffee, really. I acknowledge that he's probably better than I give him credit for. Matt Moore used to be my cup of coffee. I don't know, man. I don't know if I can hop back on that hype train. So I really see some, evidence that he's good again. Mike Minor, it's just a durability thing. He used to be a, fine starting pitcher, but I don't know what his body will let him do anymore. Bartolo Colon, I want absolutely no part of that in 2018. Maybe Martin Perez comes back and looks good, but I feel like I'm always kind of low on him now after years of being very high on him. And yeah, because of that, I just don't see this team being super competitive. But you know what? The thing is, if that rotation somehow is league average or better, then I think they're going to be very competitive. It's just I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on all points. I do think they've made some weird decisions with Calhoun and Ronald Guzman, given the composition of the roster. To me, it looks like both Guzman and Calhoun deserve a spot on the 25-man roster based on pure talent. I think that Calhoun's better than Ryan Rua, and I think that Guzman is probably a better fit for the bench than Drew Robinson. I think they're playing service time games with these guys. And as much as I dislike that, I understand it from a front office perspective, but I don't like it for a team that's trying to win now. And you would expect, based on the moves that they made, to spend the money to go out and bring in Mike Minor, the aggressive attempt to bring in Ohtani. They're not big money moves, getting Matt Moore and Doug Fister and these other guys you talked about, Martin and Chavez and Lincecum. You would want to see them be competitive early in the season to try to, make some moves and maybe move into that wild card discussion early. So I'm kind of disappointed that they're not going whole hog here. If they're not going to really try aggressively to win this year, I think that they would have been better served maybe trying to do some lower tier moves or buy some guys that are more long-term focused than bringing in Matt Moore. But I don't know. I think this is a team that's in a bit of a do it or don't do it between a rock and a hard place here, and I'm kind of disappointed that it seems like they took a half measure approach to the offseason.
That makes sense. And I don't have anything else to add other than we forgot a very important bench player for them. Carlos Tochi. He finally made it to the majors. This after a miserable spring and last season in AAA. He hit 189, 204, 245, and 54 plate appearances. So he's probably not going to change the dynamic too much, but it's fun to say Carlos Tochi's name after all those years on prospect list and whatnot.
I love how it's after all those years, and the guy's like not even 23 yet.
This is his age 22 season, but it feels like he's been around forever.
I know a couple of people like Jeff Paternostro and Jared Seidler at BP are pumped about Carlos Tochi and the Carlos Tochi experience in Texas, and he does seem like one of those Rule 5 guys who has a really good chance to stick with the Major League team all season long because he's a good fit for the lineup, but yeah, I'm not sure that that was the aggressive move that this team needed to make, but I guess we'll see.
We will see. So we're going to move on to, I believe, the American League Central now, correct?
Yep. Let's do that. Let's talk about the Chicago White Sox because they are easy to cover quickly because they didn't do a lot this offseason as we kind of expected. They did bring in the beef. They brought Wellington Castillo in to pair with Nicky Delmonico in a very steak kind of oriented middle of the lineup on this team. They brought in Miguel Gonzalez again to shore up the rotation. I know we're going to get into that. And then they shored up the bullpen in kind of a weird way by dealing for Joakim Soria and Luis Avalon and signing Hector Santiago as an NRI. This is still going to be a bad team next year, right?
Yeah, but at least they have Miguel Gonzalez and James Shields that they're out there. Two of my personal favorites. Please don't laugh at that. But yeah, I like watching those guys pitch, or I like to watch those guys pitch. You know, James Shields' weird mechanical shift is actually kind of hard to watch because it reminds me of it. You know, time catches up to us all, and I'm afraid he's going to pop his elbow with that delivery. But yeah, this is going to be a team that's still transitioning away from still transitioning within a rebuild, I guess I should say. Are they going to be a little bit better than last year? That's the hope, I think. But are they going to be much better? No. And I think they're going to finish probably ahead of the – well, I don't know. Maybe not even ahead of the Tigers. They're going to finish in fourth or fifth in that division. And there's not going to be – I don't think I guess the thing I'm fearful of here is what if those young starting pitchers do hit – and they go on this ridiculous tear to begin the season. Then we look like idiots for saying there's absolutely no chance this team competes this season. But I don't think there's a realistic chance this team's going to be competitive all season. I do think it can be fun to watch on the West because of some of their young players reaching the majors. And because you have guys like Adam Engel, who, bless his soul, has never been able to hit. But I would like, you know, he can go get it in center field. And I would like to believe that, you know, somehow, some way, he's going to find out a way to be an okay enough hitter to justify starting him in center field. But beyond that, you know, you basically know the names already. You know the situation. They've got a couple of interesting young talents. Tune in to watch them. Just don't expect this team to win a lot of games.
Yep, I agree with you 100%. I am really interested in seeing how this collection of young starting pitching talent starts to develop in Chicago. I think we're getting to the show me years on a couple of these starters. Carlos Rodon is, we're getting to the point where we might want to start saying that this didn't really work out. I'm hoping that that's not the case. He's still recovering from shoulder surgery. Hopefully he'll be back in the mix by midseason, at least I hope. But now we're getting to the point, and I don't want to write off any of these guys, but we're really hoping that guys like Giolito, Reynaldo Lopez, Carson Fulmer are going to be able to at least step into this rotation and prove like they can be starting pitchers for the good next White Sox team. Because if not, this year and next year, they've got a bunch more guys who are going to get a shot. They've got Michael Kopech, they've got Alec Hanson, they've got Dane Dunning, they've got Ian Clarkin, they've got Dylan Cease. So you've got a couple of guys who are going to be ready in 2018 and 2019. I really want to see the step forward from guys like Giolito and Lopez and Fulmer this year to kind of consolidate their position in this rotation And I think you need at least one or two of those guys to really step in and, you know, get to that number three, number four starter place at least, so that we have a look at, okay, when the rest of this, you know, in by 2019 and by 2020, we can see the skeleton of a good Chicago team.
Did you mention Kopech?
I don't know if I did. I was thinking about him, but I don't know if I mentioned him.
Yeah, but of those guys, I think I'm most hyped on watching Giolito.
Yeah.
You know, he has the best pitching coach in the majors, James Shields. He also has Don Cooper and Dave Duncan around. And it seems like his stuff might be back to where it used to be. And, yeah, I don't have anything else to add, but I'm very excited to watch him a little bit this season.
Yeah, for sure. So speaking about starting pitching, I guess we can talk about the Cleveland Indians, who still have really great starting pitchers, maybe one less than usual, as Danny Salazar is injured and may not have a spot in the rotation anymore. But the Indians are a rare team for me this offseason because I can definitely see that they got worse between 2017 and 2018. It's hard not to when you're as good as the Indians are, but they lost Carlos Santana and replaced him with Yonder Alonso, which you could do worse as a first baseman, but Carlos Santana was a big, important part of this team for a long time. The only other moves that they seem to make this offseason is they brought in Matt Belisle for their bullpen. They brought in Rajai Davis for their bench. I mean, those are not big-ticket moves. So they had a relatively quiet offseason, and they lost a guy that really is important to this team. What do you think about the Indians in 2018?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say they took a little bit of a step back with their overall talent level. That said, I think they're clearly the best team in the Central. I think they're going to win this in a walk, and they have some room for internal growth depending on what they want to do with Francisco Mejia. I know they got him some action at third base last season. They also gave him a look in the outfield this spring. And, of course, he's got a lot of experience behind the plate, so maybe he can fit into the roster in a number of different ways. And they also have Bobby Bradley, who I don't know if they believe in him enough because, you know, they signed Yonder Alonso to a multi-year deal, So I don't really know what the situation is there, but in theory, he could come in handy. And they have Yandy Diaz, who is not as good as Giovanni Urshela, and I'm glad that the Indians recognize that as fact. Plus, you know, Greg Allen and, you know, some of these other guys who technically are in their top 10 prospects but probably aren't more than bench pieces. I don't know. I think this team is going to be very competitive. I think it's not ideal that they took a step back, but I think it was just a step. I don't think it was a hop or a leap or, you know, a fall back. I think it was just a step, and I think they're going to be there when October rolls around. And it wouldn't surprise me if they end up back in the World Series because this pitching staff is very good. The lineup is mostly good. And if you buy into Yonder Alonso holding on to most of his gains, they might not miss Carlos Santana as much as you think. Of course, it's still Yonder Alonso, and I'm still not sure that I buy in 100% to what is being sold about Yonder Alonso, but I think this is going to be a good team regardless of what Yonder Alonso does.
Yeah, to me, the switch from Santana to Alonso isn't as much about Alonso as it is about Santana for me, because that guy is an on-base machine, and he really drove this offense for years and years. So I think that that's going to be missed for this team, especially if Jason Kipnis is still a pumpkin. And, you know, Lonnie Chisenhall is fine against one. This is a very platoon-heavy team. You know, you got Chisenhall and Nakin and Zimmer who will play against righties, and then you got Davis and Guyer and maybe Yan Gomes who are going to play against lefties. Santana got on base against everybody, and he was consistent and solid, and he was good for doubles, and he played a good first-base defense. Yeah, Alonso's going to pick up on some of those things and replace some of that performance. It's just that Santana was so solid for so long.
He's a good player.
Yes.
And consistent as can be.
The thing about this team, though, is you keep going back to the rotation. If this rotation stays healthy again, like even, you know, like mostly healthy, which they tend to do, this is the best rotation in baseball, probably, right? I mean, I still would put them up over really great rotations like the Cubs and the Astros.
Wow, Nationals don't even get a mention from you?
No, AJ Cole's there.
Okay, that's fair. But Josh Tomlin's here. And Mike Clevenger's here, so I don't know.
Mike Clevenger is extremely here. He was worth over 2 wins, according to Baseball Prospectus last year. Kept his ERA under 4, and he pitched 121 innings. This is my dude, and I am so all in on the Mike Clevenger bandwagon that I'm like, no problem. Kick Danny Salazar to the curb. It's fine.
You're growing your hair long in celebration of Mike Clevenger. Here's my favorite fun fact.
Let's not go that far.
Here's my favorite fun fact about Mike Clevenger. He's actually older than Trevor Bauer.
That is a bizarre fun fact because Trevor Bauer has been annoying us for ages, and Mike Clevenger just came into our hearts more recently. So, yeah, I mean, Clevenger, I really think with his stuff, he's gonna do a nice job again in this rotation this year. I think he's kind of underrated still. But they've got depth too. You know, you talk about Salazar's not even making this rotation. Cody Anderson is not even a consideration thanks to his Tommy John surgery. Ryan Merritt still exists, so I'm told. And they've got this really great bullpen headed by Allen and Miller. So it's a really solid team overall.
Yeah. So you want to move on from them now? Or
Let's talk about the garbage Detroit Tigers, whose big acquisitions this offseason included Leonis Martin and Francisco Liriano and Mike Fiers. And their bench looks to be the worst bench I've ever seen in baseball, which is really saying something considering how bad their starting lineup is as well.
You know, earlier, did I say the White Sox would only finish in fourth? Because I meant third. Because the Tigers and the Royals are awful, awful, awful.
They're bad. We'll talk a little bit about the Royals in a minute, but the Tigers are terrible looking.
Yeah. I mean, what is their positive to say here? They still have Miguel Cabrera. They still have Michael Fulmer. I like the Candelario acquisition.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how about we move on to the Royals? Because you got the number one pick, at least. And we'll go from there. But yeah, this is a bad bunch, and they did not have an inspiring offseason. And frankly, I think that was the intent. I really do think they designed on having an awful offseason, and that this is they're going for the number one pick again. So good for them. You know, it's good to have high aspirations.
Yeah, I have a tough time ripping on the Tigers for their tanking because they spent so many years kind of just damning the torpedoes and paying an extreme amount of money to try to stay competitive and extend their window. And I kind of admire that, you know, when so many teams try to, you know, save as much money or make as much money as possible. You knew this was coming. Honestly, it came, this kind of teardown came 2 years, maybe 3 years later than I expected. So I'm not even mad. I just I would like for them to be better because, you know, I would like for their fans to be rewarded, but this does seem like kind of a necessary evil. Their payroll dropped like $75 million from last year, which is unfathomable to me.
All the other teams are jealous right now. That's almost the entire Tampa Bay Rays payroll, and they're sitting in their office right now like, man, how come we couldn't do that?
But, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if this team wins like 55 games next year. They're that bad.
They're awful. Speaking of awful teams. The Kansas City Royals, at least to the Royals' credit, they did add some parts lately that will make them a little bit better. Signing John Jay, Lucas Duda. They obviously brought back Mike Moustakas. In the bullpen, they made a lot of moves. You know, Willie Peralta's here now. Blaine Boyer, Justin Grimm. Bert Smith might be here. Brad Keller might be here as a pair of Rule 5 guys. You know, they traded for Jesse Hahn, although he's already been placed on the 60-day disabled list, which is the most Jesse Hahn thing ever.
Yes.
And it's not going to be a good team. It's not. I mean, there's just – oh, they also brought back Alcides Escobar, in case you forgot about that, which, boy, yeah. I think a lot of Royals fans wish they could, but – it's not a good team, and I guess the point of intrigue here, or points of intrigue beyond, you know, the development of young players and all that normal stuff, is whether Alex Gordon can rebound and what they're going to do with Moustakas. You know, will he stay in town all year? Will they be able to find a suitor for him in July? And, you know, that applies to a lot of the interesting parts of the roster, be it Danny Duffy, maybe Ian Kennedy and Jason Hamill, depending on how they perform, and Kelvin Herrera is probably a shoe-in to get traded in July. You could probably start fitting him for Cardinals Red at this point. And yeah, it's not a good team. It's sort of a boring team. And the one thing you can say is we'll probably finish ahead of the Tigers because
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think the moves that they made at the end of the offseason guarantee that they won't be the worst team in the American League Central this year. I really like the Jay acquisition. I really like the Duda acquisition. Honestly, I thought the Mike Moustakas signing made a lot of sense for this team. I know it might push Mondesi back to the minors, which is not something I'm really fond of, but I do think that they're trying to reward their fans by putting a somewhat competitive team on the field when they could this season, even though they're in that rebuilding phase. So for the immediate term, I guess good on them. They look like they might be more of a 70-75 win team than the complete disaster that they looked like a month or two ago. The problem that I have is that I'm really nervous about the long-term outlook for this team because where a
It's
lot of teams
bad.
that rebuild have like really great prospect depth, the Royals do not, and most of their prospect depth seems to be middling-ish pitching guys, and that's not how I would rebuild a team.
No, it's bad. They have one of the worst farm systems in baseball. And you talked about the Tigers essentially paying rent for being competitive all those years. Well, the Royals are kind of in the same boat now, trading away prospects and not having a sky-high payroll to throw at free agents or what have you. Or, when they did spend, they spent on Alex Gordon, they spent on Ian Kennedy and Jason Hamill. And yeah, the chickens have come home to roost. This is a bad team, and they're going to be bad for the next few years unless they really pull off an impressive couple of drafts here or a couple of trades. So.
The tough part here is that last season they could have dealt some pieces perhaps to try to get some prospect capital back. I mean, Moustakas and Hosmer were free agents. There's the I while I like the fact that they tried to be competitive from a long-term outlook, maybe that wasn't the right decision last year. Now I think the move they've got to consider is trading away Sal Perez, because I
Yeah.
think he's the one player on this team that could bring something back in return. And the way that they've ridden him so hard for this decade, like it also would not surprise me at all if he just stops being an effective player in his 30s. He's only 28, so I know teams are going to take him up on a trade offer because he's a catcher who's good, and there's only like five of them in baseball right now, I think.
Yeah.
So I think that might be a move that they should really consider.
Yeah, I think they should too, just to see what's out there, nothing else. And I don't think we have much more to say on the Royals, so I would just say that they are basically the worst case scenario for the first team in the American League East we'll talk about, that being the Baltimore Orioles. The Orioles are entering a pivotal season
Oh,
after this
no. We
year.
can't move on to the Orioles without talking about the Twins.
Oh, wow, I just completely blanked on the Twins being in the
Now,
American League Central.
to be fair, the Twins are often a forgettable team.
Not now, though. Not now. They actually have wow, I can't believe I forgot about the Twins. That's embarrassing. So the Twins had an active offseason, too. They had Logan Morrison, Jake Odorizzi, Lance Lynn, Fernando Rodney, Addison Reed, and Zach Duke, as well as Michael Pinata, although he will not factor into their plans this year. This is a solid team. They're going to be, in all likelihood, in competition for that second wild card spot. Not good enough to knock off the Indians, barring some wild things happening both in Minnesota and Cleveland. But I was fine with what they did this winter. I probably would have liked it a bit more if they would have landed Arrieta or Yu Darvish. I get it. They didn't want to go all out, or they couldn't go all out, whatever it was. But I thought it was a fine offseason, maybe even a good offseason. And they tried, and that was more than you can say for a lot of teams. So I suppose I should be a little kinder to them as a whole. But yeah, this is a solid to good team, and they have some help on the way with Nick Gordon and with, I believe, some of their younger pitchers like Gonsalves. And I
Mejia.
think there's one other name that's escaping me at this point. Fernando Romero. He might be in the fold sometime and later in this year, depending on how aggressive they want to get there. So yeah,
Yeah, the Twins, they made a lot of moves, like you said, and I thought that while they could have used some high-end talent, they did a really great job of papering over their weaknesses. They needed starting pitching, so they got Lance Lynn and Jake Odorizzi, which are not the most exciting names. They're not guys I would consider more than number three starters, but they needed number three starters, man, so they got them. Logan Morrison really, I think, is an underrated addition to their lineup, especially if he's the everyday DH. And the back end of their bullpen now with Rodney Reed and Trevor Hildenberger is pretty decent. So this is a team that I think is, a superstar away from being that lead contender for the number two wild card spot, but they had a great offseason.
Yep, that's fair. So now we can move on to the Baltimore Orioles. I don't think we have anything more to say about the Twins.
Nope.
Sorry, Minnesota. I really did not mean to forget you, but yeah, this is a big offseason. Excuse me, a big season for the Orioles because after this year, Manny Machado will be a free agent. Adam Jones will be a free agent. Dan Duquette and Buck Showalter will be free agents, and I didn't even mention Zach Britton or Brad Brock. Again, this is an important year for this team, and they made some moves here lately. They signed Colby Rasmus to a non-roster deal that looks pretty smart. He was really good with Tampa Bay last season before he walked away from the game. They added Danny Valencia recently. He's also going to make their opening day roster off the bench. Of course, they signed Andrew Cashner, Chris Tillman, and Alex Cobb to help beef up the rotation. And I think we did not talk about Alex Cobb.
No.
I was surprised at the deal he got because I figured he'd get like a Lance Lynn type deal. Instead, he got closer to his actual market value, which is cool. And he's tougher than a dollar stake. I don't know how much I trust his health going forward, but he's a smart pitcher. He's a savvy pitcher. My hope is that he gets a change up back because if he does, he can be an above average talent. If he doesn't, it's a little more dicey. And I guess I could see that deal going south, which would be a shame to me because, again, he got his market value. The Orioles didn't stiff him. They didn't get this ridiculously team-friendly contract. And I think that, frankly, the universe should reward that, as silly as it sounds. But, this offseason, you kind of had a hope that those deals that were handed out that were market value or thereabout are rewarded because maybe it'll inspire a little bit more of that behavior heading forward. But the rotation is the thing with this team because, the other areas look fine to good, and it just depends. Can they get enough production out of Cashner and Tillman, and I guess even Cobb, if you want to throw them in there, to keep afloat and to perhaps even challenge that second wild card spot? And frankly, I don't necessarily see it, but I'm thinking that they're closer than I would have said they were 2 months ago, a month ago, whatever.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. The interesting thing for this team is that they really needed to add starting pitching. I think the Alex Cobb signing was fabulous. I thought that was a really smart, really good signing for them. And it makes the rest of their offseason look a lot better because when you are signing Andrew Cashner not to really be the number two or number three starter for this team, but really more of your number four, I really appreciate that deal more because he's a guy who shows up and throws innings. He's not good, but they needed depth and they needed innings. And so when he's that signing and he's not going to be the number two starter, you've got a lot better. I can be a lot more gracious with my praise for that deal. It's really hard to consider the Orioles a contender when on their projected 25-man roster, they have four guys who were NRIs in Colby Rasmus, Pedro Alvarez, Danny Valencia, and Craig Gentry. And three Rule 5 players in Anthony Santander, Nestor Cortes Jr., and Pedro Rahal. That's 7 out of 25 of their roster spots are going to guys who, for one reason or another, could be considered fungible replacement level players. Now, with Rasmus and Valencia, I think that pairing, especially as a platoon, is not replacement level. I think that's substantially better than replacement level. But this is a team that doesn't have a lot of depth, that has a weird bench, that has a really not the same type of dominant bullpen that we've come to expect from this team. And yeah, they've got some injuries. Zach Britton will eventually come back. Gabbianoa will eventually come back. Mark Trumbo will eventually come back. It's just a weird team, and I don't think they did enough to really move themselves into the conversation.
It is a weird team, although I might push back on the depth point just a little bit because they do have some prospects who could make the majors before the season's out. Ryan Mountcastle got hurt, but He could be there late in the year, depending on how aggressive they want to get and whether there's a need for him. Austin Hayes, I know you're very high on. He'll probably be there before the year is out. On the pitching side of things, they have Tanner Scott, Chris Lee, potentially Hunter Harvey, depending again on how aggressive they want to get. Same with Keegan Aiken. And they also have some help in the bullpen. Yakabonis, Hart. I believe there's one other name who I'm forgetting here who could factor into their bullpen later in the year. The point is, yeah, they have some depth coming in the form of prospects. Whether it's enough or not, we'll see. But yeah, I agree with all your points. I would say that, you know, some of the non-roster guys, like Pedro Alvarez, he's only there because Mark Trumbo's hurt. So I guess I give him a little bit of a pass on that. And otherwise, yeah, I see the reservations about this team, and I don't think it's likely that they're highly competitive, but I could see them potentially finishing in third place because I think they're less likely to throw in the towel than the Blue Jays if both are in the same spot come July.
Yeah, I can definitely I agree with that to some extent. I think when we talk more about the Blue Jays, we can talk about which team will come in third and which team will come in fourth, but I think that it is kind of a toss-up between those two teams at that point.
Speaking of toss-ups between two teams, I think this is where we can transition to the Boston Red Sox because most everyone has the American League East as a toss-up between the Red Sox and Yankees. I favor the Yankees. The last time we had this conversation, I favored the Yankees. You favor the Red Sox. Have you changed your opinion
Yep, I sure have. I think that some of the
yet?
Yankees moves, and we can talk about those in a minute, put them back over the top, but that's just a testament to how close I think those two teams were when I made that statement. For the Red Sox, all we need to talk about really is JD Martinez. I mean, we can talk a little bit about Christian Vasquez's extension. We can talk a little bit about Mitch Moreland, which, whoops. But this team really only made one major move this offseason. It just happened to be the absolute right move for this particular team. It added power. It solidified the DH position. In turn, it improved their first base situation. JD Martinez is a top-tier slugger, and this is a team that was one top-tier slugger away from being the class of their division. It just so happens that their arch rivals also got a top-tier slugger, except they got one who can play defense, and they were already also really good.
Yeah, and I would say the hope for the Red Sox beyond that is that they get some more internal growth because Mookie Betts is entering his age 25 season. Benintendi is not even 24 years old. Xander Bogaerts feels like he's been around forever. He's not even 25 and a half. Rafael Devers is 21. Even Vasquez, I thought that deal was about cost certainty more than anything, but he had a nice season last year and he's not yet 28. Jackie Bradley Jr. is not yet 28. So there's some youth still in this lineup, and it's possible that those guys make gains. And, you know, we talked about the rotation before and how good Sale Price can be, potentially how good Sale Price Porcello can be. They're dealing with some injuries there. The bullpen, you know, Craig Kimbrell is just an absolute monster still. Then you have Barnes, Kelly, Smith, and Embry, as well as a couple of non-roster invitees. I think Bobby Pointer is going to make it, and he's kind of interesting if you haven't seen him. But yeah, this is a team that's going to be good, depending on how healthy the rotation stays, could be very good. And I don't think they're going to win the American League East, but I think they're clearly the second best team in the division, and they are the American League team who I feel most confident saying will be a wild card team. I think they absolutely will lock up that first wild card spot. And they're going to be a pretty tough challenge for whichever top seeded team gets to play them in the second round if they advance that far.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I did forget about re-signing Eduardo Nunez, which I thought was a brilliant move, especially at his cost, and especially given that Dustin Pedroia is a walking injury risk. The one thing I'll quickly say is that because of these injuries that they've sustained, all of a sudden their starting rotation and their bullpen depth looks a little sketchy. You know, they might open the season with Hector Velasquez in the rotation, which is not a very Red Sox thing to do. They're short Tyler Thornburg, they're short Steven Wright, they're short Eduardo Rodriguez, they're short Drew Pomeranz. I do think that their depth is going to allow them to make a nice recovery once we get into later on in the season, and this team always has the ability to go trade for talent at midseason. So I'm not super, super worried about it, but I do think it's something to keep an eye on.
I agree with that.
So let's talk about the rivals. Let's talk about the Yankees. They made a fairly important deal this offseason, trading for Giancarlo Stanton, giving them an absolute unit of an outfield. They brought in Neil Walker late in the game to shore up their infield, which turned out to be very prescient, considering Greg Bird has a foot injury that's going to keep him out and continue to keep him injured. They brought in Brandon Drury to solidify the infield as well. And then, as far as everything else goes, they re-signed CC Sabathia. They did not do a lot to address their pitching staff. What do you think about this offseason? You've said before that you think the Yankees are the class of the American League East. Is this a true top-tier team?
Yeah, why wouldn't it be? Their lineup, the way things have worked out, it's like the universe is conspiring to make Tyler Wade into a cult favorite because, Bird getting injured, Jacoby Ellsbury goes down. Now they're kind of forced to play Wade at second base against right-hand pitching. At least I assume that's the plan with Tyler Austin perhaps getting the reps against left-hand pitching at first base. So the Walker signing was a master stroke, in my opinion. And I think this is a very good team. They have prospects on the way who we aren't even mentioning. Gleyber Torres, Miguel Andujar. You can extend that to Clint Frazier if you still believe in him and if he can get back from his concussion-related symptoms, or excuse me, concussion-related rehab. When you look at the rotation depth, they have guys like Domingo German. They have guys like Chance Adams. They have guys like Justice Sheffield and Domingo Acevedo and there's a lot of talent coming for this team in the near future, which is concerning because it already looks like a top-flight American League team as it stands. And the idea that they can continue to add internally or externally if they choose to trade some of those pieces is terrifying to me if I'm another team. I mean, this is a very good team, a very, very good team. And I don't know, what's the weakness here? What is the weakness? Is it if Aaron Hicks doesn't retain the growth he made last season against right-handed pitching? Because that seems like a fairly minor flaw in this team, if that's the biggest one. Maybe it's starting pitching health. Maybe Severino, Tanaka, one of those guys gets hurt. Maybe Sonny Gray gets hurt again. I don't know, but on paper, this looks like a very, very, very good team.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think this is probably the second best team in the American League, behind the Astros. The only weakness is exactly what you said. I would like to see more reliability in their starting rotation. Severino, Tanaka, and Gray all feel like they're one elbow tweak away from being out until 2020. But you can say that about almost every team. That's really picking nits. And like you said, Chance Adams, Domingo German, they've got talent on the way. They can, at any point, if they wanted to, they could package Miguel Andujar and Clint Frazier and go get like another ace right away. So you don't really have anything to be concerned about here, I don't think. And the little moves, the Walker and Drury trades, I think they look really good. I know that some people are frustrated because that is supposedly keeping Andujar and Torres in the minor leagues. Let's be real. Andujar and Torres were going to start the year in the minor leagues because teams play service time games. And there was no indication that these guys were going to start the season in April on this major league roster. Now the Yankees have really good regular players to play fit that role for the first half of the season, maybe the entire season, while these guys who do have some development time needed left in the minors to get that time. This isn't like the same thing as just, artificially holding guys down to, crop up their value and give them an extra year. It's a little bit of doing that while also making your major league team actually better. So it's hard to argue with those moves.
Right, and Torres missed time, so it makes sense for him to get, some of that rust off in the minors. I think that
Sure.
one's defensible, even if they hadn't went out and gotten Drury and Walker. So plus, Tyler Wade, they could have easily justified starting him in the minors. To their credit, they're not doing that. And if any team doesn't need to play service time games, it's the Yankees, right? They can afford anyone. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
It doesn't matter, so.
I think we can be pretty worried that next year they're going to go out and they're going to spend the money to bring in another superstar to add to this core. I do not see any team in baseball, including the Houston Astros, the Los Angeles Dodgers, you name another team, the Chicago Cubs. I don't think any team in baseball is better set for the next 5 years than the New York Yankees.
I don't think I can disagree. And the funny thing is, the last time I checked, their payroll was south of the Seattle Mariners payroll.
That's gross.
Yep, this is a very good team. They're going to be a very good team for the considerate future. Do you want to switch to a team that's probably not going to be a very good team
Much
anytime
like
soon? We're talking
the New
about,
York
oh, go
Yankees,
ahead. Oh,
the
yes.
Tampa Bay
We're talking
Rays.
about the Tampa Bay Region's second or third favorite team. The Tampa Bay Rays, they had a very busy winter, a brutal winter, because, boy, they traded Evan Longoria, they traded Steven Souza, they traded Corey Dickerson, they traded Jake Odorizzi, and they brought in Carlos Gomez, Denard Span, CJ Cron, Joey Wendell,
The hits keep coming.
and they're going with this weird 4.5 man rotation thing that, frankly, I'm gonna be honest. I've talked to a couple of front office guys. I've talked to, whoever, and no one seems to be able to come up with more upside for this plan than downsides. And maybe that's just baseball and being slow to embrace new ideas or whatever. But these are smart guys, and nobody can figure out a reason to actually try this and to embrace this because it just seems like it's going to labor your roster management, it's going to labor your arms, it's going to labor basically everything, your manager's wits, your general manager's wits. It just seems like a complete and utter waste of time because, again, what is the upside here? Why bend over backward to, form this contraption so you can have Yonny Chirinos, Ryan Yarbrough, and Matt Andreese and Andrew Kittredge, if that's your, multiple inning four? Why bend over backwards for those four? Why not just insert Anthony Banda and go with a 5-man rotation if you're not happy with those guys as, 4 or 5 inning starters? Why do this?
Yeah,
Why? Why, Ryan?
I don't understand. And to me, it seems like you'd be much better off doing a tandem start for that fifth rotation spot. Just commit to Andreessen Yarbrough, or just commit to Yonny Chirinos and Matt Andrees for that fifth starter spot. Send the other guys down to AAA so that they can stay stretched out and continue to be these 4 to 5 inning guys, rather than stock your bullpen with, it's a weird decision for them to move on from Daniel Hudson and Dan Jennings in the way that they did. They still owe Hudson a ton of money, and they were just like cutting him loose. And while I respect a team's desire, if they commit to something, they want to go for it, it just seemed like a very, very weird move from the outside.
Everything they do seems like a very, very weird move from the outside. Everything. When was the last time the Rays made a move outside of like last July? Because, those were kind of gimme moves. When was the last time they made a move and we said, you know what? This makes a ton of sense. I guess it was Carlos
Carlos
Gomez, but I
Gomez,
mean,
yeah.
like, right. But like a move that actually had like long-term ramifications.
I don't know. I've been I was legitimately mad when they acquired Adeny Hecheverria. That made me angry in a similar way to the Evan Longoria trade, because I'm a weird person like that. But these they haven't made a lot of moves that seem good. They seem like they are trying to save money, and that is causing them to make moves that are not baseball moves, that they have to try the weirdest things that they can come up with in terms of perceived value, where other teams don't perceive the same value in players. And they're young players, the players that are supposed to be coming up and filling roles on this team. It just hasn't happened for them yet, with the exception of maybe Jake Faria and Blake Snell in the second half last year. They're supposed to be a team that has young talent coming pretty much all the time. And with Brent Honeywell, they held him in the minor leagues until he broke. With Jose De Leon, they didn't bring him up when perhaps I think they might should have, and he broke. And now they're keeping their best young talents in the minor leagues to, assumedly, service time games. But
Christian, oh, we know what it is. Come on, you know what it is. Willie Adames is better than Adini Echevarria and Joey Wendell probably combined.
Yes,
we know
that's
exactly
accurate.
Why he's in Durham. We know exactly why he's going to be in there probably longer than, you know, 2 weeks or whatever. Yeah, they're not paying Adini Echevarria $5 million to be their shortstop for a month. You know what I mean?
No.
They're not.
And
he's gonna be in the minors till probably June.
But they're willing to cut bait on Daniel Hudson today, which does.
But they're looking. Yeah, they're looking to trade him. I would note. So whether they're gonna find a taker, maybe they can trade him to Pittsburgh for Corey Dickerson or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Right. This is the weird thing. They keep doing these things where they DFA a guy and then they have to make a move with him, which makes no sense.
No sense. They lose all their leverage.
But and they didn't have that much to begin with. You only have a little bit when you're trying to trade guys like Corey Dickerson and Daniel Hudson. Keep that leverage.
I will note my favorite statistic. Andrew Kittredge last season threw 71% sliders.
Oh, my gosh. That's a Houston Astros number.
Right. So that's about the only fun fact I have for this team that is actually fun. Otherwise, God bless you, St. Pete, because this is going to be a bad team.
Yeah. Yeah, that's accurate on all counts. So we'll move on to the Toronto Blue Jays. They've made a few moves. They tend to be under the radar moves this year. They brought in Curtis Granderson and Randall Grichuk to supplement the outfield. They brought in Aledmys Diaz and Yanjirvis Solarte to supplement the infield. They also brought in Danny Espinosa. That's going to be its own thing I need to talk about in a minute. Jaime Garcia is going to be their fifth starter, which I thought was a really smart signing. And then they supplemented the bullpen with, we've talked about these guys before, Sungwan Oh, John Axford, and Tyler Clippard. Tell me your thoughts on this Toronto Blue Jays team.
I mean, it looks like a decent team, doesn't it? It probably looks like a better team than they're given credit for being. That said, I guess my hold up with them is really the rotation. I don't know what Aaron Sanchez is going to give them. And with Marcus Stroman already questionable with shoulder inflammation, it makes me a little nervous. I did like the Jaime Garcia addition. I think if you could tell me those guys are healthy, I would say this is clearly the third best team in the American League East, and that they even have a chance at a wild card spot. But because of the reservations I have about the rotation health, it's hard for me to fully buy in. And I could see this team, you know, if they're not really in it come July, I could see them tearing apart a little bit and trying to be in a position where maybe they're a little bit ahead of the rebuild for when Vladimir Guerrero Jr. reaches the majors, when Bichette reaches the majors and when some of their other young talent, you know, Anthony Alford, I think you're going to see his stock continue to go back up. And they also have a few interesting arms. I just saw a video yesterday of, I think it's Nate Pearson, and he looked pretty good. And yeah, they have some interesting young talent on the way, and they could in theory be competitive this season. I just don't know if I fully buy in because of the rotation and because I am a coward who is always very conservative about pitcher health.
Well, the rotation to me actually is, I think, a strong point for this team. It was a lot more of a strong point when Marcus Stroman was fully healthy. I actually do like this rotation very much. You know, Stroman and Sanchez worry me with the injury issues, but Happ, Estrada, and Garcia aren't the sexiest names in the world, but they certainly are going to provide innings at a, you know, number three, number four starter level, I feel like. I do have some weird reservations about how the team is constructed. It looks like Aledmys Diaz might be the opening day shortstop because of Troy Tulowitzki's injury. To me, that's ridiculous. Why would you start Aledmys Diaz when your team has Yanjirvis Solarte? And why do the Blue Jays continue for years and years? They seem to want to have a terrible offense, good defense, middle infield backup, and focus on that, whether it was Darwin Barney for years and then Ryan Goins, and now they've brought in Danny Espinosa, who looks like he's going to make the 25-man roster until Tulowitzki's healthy. I don't understand it. And then they start Aledmys Diaz, who's kind of a butcher at shortstop. If you're going to start a butcher at shortstop, put Solarte out there and get some offense.
Yeah, that's a good point. And they also have Richard Urena in AAA.
Yes.
I bring him up because we went to an Orioles Blue Jays game last September, and Chris Tillman treated Richard Urena like he was what's a good comparison here? Mike Trout. He would not throw the dude a fastball. I think he walked him on four pitches his first time up. He might have done the same thing again the second time up. And it was just like, wow, is Richard Urena like this amazing player who I didn't really, you know, I mean, I knew he was an okay prospect, a good prospect, but wow, that really opened my eyes. But yeah, this team, they could be good. I just have those reservations. And you're right, you know, if those guys are healthy, the rotation looks like a strength. And their shortstop situation is also weird to me. I would prefer Solarte for sure. They have Luke Maley, which is a plus for any team. I mean, that is a he has that boy next door charm to him, you know?
Yeah, the address of the boy next door might be 150, which was his batting average, I think.
Oh, God. I thought you were going to say Buffalo.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. And still, he was an improvement over the other backup catchers that the team ran out last year. So that's saying something. I actually like Luke Maley a lot as a backup catcher. But, yeah, it's a weird team. I don't know if I would put them number four, and I would put the Orioles number three. And that depends a lot, I think, on whether or not they decide to move Josh Donaldson. It depends a lot on whether they try to move somebody else on this team. I have a feeling that the right move for the Blue Jays is to trade Josh Donaldson this season at the deadline and really start looking at 2019 and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and maybe Bo Bichette. And when they deal Donaldson, to bring in talent that's a little closer to the major leagues so that the rebuilding can really start in earnest in 2019.
That makes sense to me. I don't think I can really argue against that. And I don't think Mark Shapiro is going to re-sign Josh Donaldson. So it's really, do they trade him at the deadline or do they hold on to him and just recoup the draft pick at year's end? And depending on the package, I assume Donaldson would demand a prospect package better than a draft pick in the following summer's draft. So
yeah.
Then again, who knows? You know, maybe he gets hurt and his stock tanks or something. I hope not, but you know, you never know. And yeah, I don't know. I guess I would have them third right now, even with the reservations I expressed about their rotation, just because I think their upside is especially, I guess, better than the Orioles rotation. Like mm-hmm. realistically, if the Orioles get four number four starter performances, or say number three starter performances out of Bundy, Gausman, Cobb, and Cashner, they're in a very, very good place. Whereas that would be kind of a disappointment from the Blue Jays because, you know, Sanchez and Stroman, you expect a little bit more from them. So I guess I would say, yeah, I would have the Blue Jays just above the Orioles and obviously well below the two monsters in this division. And that leaves the Rays fifth. So that's about right.
Yeah. Okay, so I have two rapid-fire questions for you. One is that if the Blue Jays were to trade Josh Donaldson this offseason, where do you think – or this at the deadline, where do you think they trade?
He still makes sense for St. Louis, right?
I think that would make sense, but I'm guessing the Yankees.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, okay. You really don't like Miguel Andujar, do you?
No, I actually like Miguel Andujar fine. I think that he's the right person to trade for if the Yankees can't trade for – Machado early. I think it would be a really weird deal, and I think the Blue Jays might not want to trade within the division, even though I think that's a little bit silly because he's leaving anyway. But if they're well and truly out of contention, I would definitely see the Yankees like bringing him in on the short term and then signing somebody else to play third base, and I think they've got the prospect talent to bring him in, not feel bad.
That makes sense. What's the second rapid-fire question?
Jose Bautista. The last big name free agent to not find a home. Do you think he plays in 2018?
No. Also, Greg Holland.
That's right, Greg Holland. What's going on?
Not much, apparently. Nobody's calling.
Maybe the Long Island Ducks need a closer. I don't know.
Actually, I feel like Holland will land with the Angels or the Diamondbacks. I know the Cardinals have been tied to him as well. Maybe they are, but it has to be one of those three teams. It has to be soon, right? There's no sense in making this drag on any longer. He is perfectly fine, the good reliever. He has late inning experience. Let's not pretend he doesn't belong on a big league roster.
And he belongs at the back of a big league bullpen. I mean, he's really good. I just think maybe he was hoping, or his agent was hoping, that some team would suffer a serious closer injury, and that didn't really seem to happen this offseason.
But it kind of did with the Cardinals. You know, Luke Gregerson's out, and
yeah,
Alex Reyes.
Luke Gregerson.
Yeah, but that speaks to their need for Greg Holland, and yet that doesn't seem to inspire them to go out and actually get Greg Holland. So it's been an interesting little game of chicken, I guess, they're playing with Greg Holland's agent. Like, you know you want to come here and close, but we don't really want to pay you like you should be paid. So I guess they're seeing who blinks first, and who knows? The Cardinals might end up losing him to a different team if they don't go ahead and blink and just give the guy what he wants.
Well, I guess we'll have something to talk about when we get back together next episode to talk about the National League. Maybe we can talk about the Cardinals then?
Maybe. If I don't forget them like the Twins. I have a Midwest bias, apparently.
Yeah, we all know that you're big East Coast and big West Coast, so forget those little guys in the middle of the country. Well, thank you for listening, everyone. We will be back soon with another episode of the DFA Podcast. We will see you then.